Good morning and welcome to CIO Yarn Live. I'm your host, Ryan the Lion, and we're going to have a little bit of fun today. So you'll hear my voice echo. We've just started a little bit late trying to solve that technology problem. And of course, it wouldn't be a technology show without a technology problem. So let's crack into it. And I'd like to welcome to today's special guest, Roxanne Sultan, CDO of Southern Cross Health Society. How are you doing this morning, Rox?
I'm doing fine. We've been having a lot of fun for the last 45 minutes.
Put your earbuds on, turn your sound off, do the speaking.
Use the phone. Yeah.
Yep. But look, I always bring out this story. When I was working with Google, we had we're doing a session at Vector, and we had 9 of the senior people at Vector, head of Google New Zealand, head of Google Asia Pacific, and it took 45 minutes for someone in the room to find that the WebEx button had changed to hand controls over someone else. And here I was, the little account manager, 26 years old, with all these senior people, and I literally was sweating bricks that day. So this is not too bad. We can deal with a bit of echo.
I've always had in my career, if someone did a demo and it worked perfectly fine, I thought, let's not do business with them.
I haven't heard that one before.
Always fail, because if it doesn't fail, something's not right.
Yep. Well, it takes me right back to one of the early days of when the CIO Summit was being formed. And the CIO conference had split into the CIO conference and the CIO Summit. And 2 years after, the CIO community said, come back together because one is better. And in the advisory board meeting, the CIOs said, we know that projects go wrong, always go wrong, so we don't want to hear bright vendor talk about how perfectly they are. We want to hear from our peers the honest truth about something going wrong and who come to the table to be part of fixing it, especially who didn't turn up. I don't know. So that whole acceptance that it's not going to run. So if you're out there listening at the moment, apologize for the technical issues. It's the first time in over 100 of these that it's happened. I'll take the blame for it. It's something I've done. Well, let's crack into it. So, in true AFQY style, if we could ask you to introduce yourself to the person a little bit and also hear about the role in the career.
Fabulous. Well, so like Ryan said, I'm Roxanne. I'm the CDO at Southern Cross Health Society. I've been here for 2 years and 7 months, and it feels like it's only yesterday, but I guess the pandemic is sort of makes time feels a lot longer than it has been. I have been in digital probably 25 years. I started my career when I came in from Canada as a Yellow Page rep, and my first product I started selling was getting on the internet. So I was just reminded of that this week as I was telling someone how long I've been in New Zealand. And I remember in those days I was doing internet cafes. I was explaining to companies why it's really important for them to get on the internet. Although it didn't make coffee, it was certainly going to help their business sell their products and services a lot better. And so we'd educate businesses on how to get to the internet, why the internet was so important. So it does make me feel old. And I suppose the way why I was thinking about it is because I'm turning 50 this year, and I'm thinking, wow, half life, you know. And then you reflect on what's happened in the last 25 years, and you go, the world is moving at a fast pace, where today, although with some technical difficulty, it's been an amazing journey. So for me, I've worked a lot in mostly always related in digital, but mostly in sales, product development, strategy, transformation. And what a great opportunity for me was to be able to take on the technology aspects of the business and be able to look at what the other side of the coin looks like. So, yes, I bring quite a wide breadth and depth of experience within the technology, and it's great because with the people I'm working with, I'm learning a lot from them and they're learning from me. So really enjoy it looking forward to the future.
Absolutely. And I was sitting there thinking about it when you're talking about it, and it's almost like you've gone from the the dreaming about it part, the sales and marketing side of it, to the delivery and the doing part of it, as in the technology side of it. So you're bringing in that vision from, I wish we could do this, can we do that? And now you're in the delivery seat, you'll have those other people coming to you going, Roxanne, can we do this? And you're like,
do it, and why is it so expensive and I want it now? So the ultimate dream is, why don't I take over the department and get it done myself? But it's quite interesting to say, though. Yeah, now when I see the business coming, I've seen you.
I like that. I've seen you. Yeah, yeah. I was.
You know how many capital squares I've purchased in my career?
All righty. Well, let's crack into our first of three questions. And at this time, I'd also like to say a warm thanks to Flock Consulting, our sponsor. So, Flock Consulting, John Foote, have sponsored the CIO Yarn Live for April. And you'll see the wee logo at the bottom, and just make we mention. That'll remind you of your advertising days a little bit. So our first big question is about culture. And it's one of my favorite parts of business and thing that we do a lot of work in around APY. You know, our events have a few things in there, like the no selling rule, and you can't ask what a person does until the third question, which is all about setting the atmosphere and culture in a way that enables good authentic discussions. So where does culture fit in your plans? What do you do to actively build culture and connecting people?
It's a good question. And when I was, reflecting on those over time, because culture is a very broad word and everybody knows you need it to be successful. But what does it actually mean to build culture? And is culture the thing you're building, or is culture the outcome of what you've built? And I guess that's where my reflection was, is that culture is an outcome. It's not a thing you do. It's actually everything you do results in a culture that you create. And when I think about that, for me, my approach has always been, and I guess it has never been as clear as it is now, it's about people. If you get the right people and you get the right mindset and you get the right trusting environment, you will get collaboration. You will get friendships, you will get long-lasting, endurement of people working alongside each other and wanting to support each other and care. And that, to me, is where culture comes in. Culture is something that you have to absolutely seed. You've got to cultivate. You've got to water it consistently. And that means that every single behavior, mindset, and everything you bring into the business either destroys, builds, or builds the culture. So for me, people, picking the right talent, and talent not necessarily through skills, because I know specifically in technology, we've had a lot of tech leaders in the past in very high-level position. But I think over time, seeing that tech leadership not matched up with people leadership doesn't build culture. So you can get great technology, but if people don't talk to each other, there's bullying, there's all sorts of, wrong mindset. At the end of the day, nobody benefits from it. So for me, culture, is something that at Sun Cross, I'm very proud of. I've picked talent to make sure that they're not only great people leader, but they can foster better leadership with themselves and their teams and ensure that collaboration, trust, the right environment is created, and culture just comes into it. It just happens. I've put some of the key things as well as I've got a few rules as well culture is one thing. You can bring people in, but to maintain a good culture is also needs a lot of hard work. And it's a bit like a marriage, right? It's not because you're married that suddenly you can just lay off and, do nothing. Actually, you got to keep working at it. And it is hard. It is really hard. So that's got to be your number one priority. So one of the key modules, every leader brings their own flavor of culture, right? So for me, my flavor is work hard, play hard. And I stand by that, I work hard, but I play hard. I like to have fun because we spend a lot of time at work. And I always think, when I wake up one day when I'm much older than I am now, what would I be thinking? Should I have worked harder or should I spend more time living? And we spend so much time at work that it's important to remember this is just a job. but the people you meet, the influences that you have, the advice that you give people, that will be forever lasting and well further than the job that they're in. So we've got to be careful about making sure that we work, but we also have a lot of fun with it, or else the job wouldn't be fun.
Can I jump in there, Rox?
Yeah.
Can I jump in there and say, yeah, I love the two parts, work hard, play hard, especially, but also you keep referring to the fact that we spend so much time at work. And this goes back to one of my stories, my first week of a real job, you know, working in the corporate office. And I went home because I was still living with mum and dad, and said to dad, who was what they used to call the personnel manager, HR was the word. Of course, now I think HR is called an employee experience. So there are three transitions there. And I said to dad, oh, my boss is an asshole. You know, he's like this, like this. And he said, you know, that's life. You know, get on with it. I was like, well, how are we going to, like, you know, get on with people and try and be friendly? And he said, no, this is work, you know. And keep your head down, your bum up, do your job. Don't share who you are. You're not there to make friends. Your friends are from outside of work. You go to work, do your job. And I was like, that sucks. We spend most of our work, life at work. We therefore should be able to have good relationships and friendships there. Anyway, no, don't, because someone will use something to say about your life against you. And I was like, no. About a year later, I had a promotion coming, and I was a real up-and-comer as a young art director. And this person used some of my personal stories to say that I'm not, you know, here at the job. He's just a young person. I didn't get drunk. He, you know, he's pissed, and therefore my manager was overruled by their manager, and I didn't get the promotion that other person did. When I found out about it, it was like unbelievable. But yeah, so two things. We work with.
And you know, Ryan, it's a really important part, because this still happens today. And, you know, I think this is why I'm very committed to leadership and good leadership. And what does it mean to be a good leader? Because, yes, there is a lot of, you know, politics and things behind the scenes that, you know, sometimes doesn't foster great culture. And I've always said, you know, you can only influence the people below you, but you can't influence the people above you. But I always thought to myself, one day, if I get enough, you know, enough advancement, I'll be damn sure that if ever I find myself, you know, in a place where I can influence a lot of people, then it's on me to make a difference. And yeah, you can't influence everybody else, but if you start with yourself as a leader and ensure that you're the best possible leader, then all you're doing is creating better leaders under you that will then hopefully then, it's what I call pay it forward, will then create better leaders under them. We need a whole lot more of that, because unfortunately, you're quite right, what you've described still happens today. And we all learn through that. You know, it's happened to me a few times as well. And but these are lessons that I've learned, and I knew that I was never going to try to repeat that. And I never forget those lessons, because that's what reminds me of what a good leader looks like and what a poor leader looks like. You know, so you got to keep those stories alive, because they are very, very true today.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we need to foster a better generation.
Well, we could spend all day talking about this. I would love to, but we do need to tackle a couple of these other questions. So now I'm going to take us to the technology section, because, you know, technology is what spins our wheels. And thinking back, another thing you mentioned about culture and the bullying. You know, I think about the old school tech culture where people would challenge and call people out almost as though they were stupid. Like, no, that's not how you do it. This is what you do. No. You write it like this. You do it like that. And it was a general tech culture everywhere. And, you know, it's got to move on from that. But tech spins our wheels. It gets people excited. So can you tell us about what project currently working on? Obviously, publicly, so there'll be some stuff you can't, but what you can share, we'd love to have you you an idea and understand some of the cool stuff and the challenges and how it's going.
Yeah, I think it's, I suppose people in technology will probably relate. I think we're in an era where most of us in businesses, or at least in large corporates that have invested in the year 2000 into big, big systems that were fabulous in those days, probably in 2022 are no longer fit for purpose. So like everybody else, I suspect we are also in the core of, you know, ripping out the beast and modernizing our systems, right? So I think we've come from a wave of time in the last 20 years where big ERPs, you know, big sort of on-premise systems were being put in. We've seen a change to move to cloud, to be much more agile. Sometimes I was going to say fragile, but yes, agile. And so that means that what was good then needs to change to what are the new current technologies. But on top of that, what we've seen in the last sort of 10 to 15 years, a proliferation of new software coming through. So as we move from hardware to software, we've gone the opposite side where software is now so easy to acquire. Then there's a proliferation of applications and platforms that on top of having some very hardcore platforms that are no longer fit for purpose, it's attached to a multitude of software that goes out of date very, very quickly, right? So a little bit like in the old days when you used to buy something, it would last you 10, 15 years. Today, it lasts you about barely 12 months. I don't think it's a very different in technology. So some of the core projects that we're doing at the moment is really modernizing our technology from what we call monolithic blocks to more Lego blocks, right? And in the same journey is simplifying the amount of application that we've got. And this is not easy, right? Because most of our people want to be enabled. And, you know, the amount of software out there, like even the StreamYard we're using today and all sorts of software, it's all out there for free. People want to use it, start using, putting stuff on there, and not necessarily understanding, one, the dangers of it, two, what it does in terms of creating more complexity. And then at the other end, what we get is, but this technology is so complex, it doesn't work, it takes forever. And you go, yes, it's probably because we have 200 applications we probably don't need. But unfortunately, because everybody wants something, and, you know, it's quite hard as human beings, we go, I'll just try it, you know. So I always say I've got 900 people who have 900 great ideas every day of great software that they want to play with. But unfortunately, you know, it makes technology extremely complex and difficult to deal with. So a lot of the projects we're working on is complex. It's technologies that don't have software developers anymore in the marketplace. In fact, it's dead as a technology or as a software or as a coding practice. So how do you move from that to, you know, new, more everlasting technology? So I think that's the really flavor of most businesses I talk with, is we're modernizing, but we're moving into, instead of very customized, one-off type, cool little tech thing, is what's the likelihood that this software will be here? So, you know, the Microsoft of this world, that's going to be here for a while. You know, the AWS, you know, so we're now moving all these, you know, I always say we have nine of something and we have four of something else. And you go, well, why do we have so many? Well, because everybody had a great idea. So we're now trying to consolidate that into one idea or one technology that's actually going to last us longer. It's not going to be perfect, but it will serve a whole lot of us and make life a lot easier. Easier said than done, but that's, I guess, what's motivating our technology people today. It's the challenge of moving from something that is unsupported, end of life, to something that's going to last, hopefully, at least for the next 10 years.
And, you know, what you described, I've always been amazed when I hear about these situations, especially when I was working in software sales myself and speaking to yourself around purchasing software, and some of these situations didn't make sense. You know, you'd be like, why have you got nine of those? Why have you got four of those? Why? Oh, well, we started with this and we wanted to bring in that. So then we integrated it so we can use this part from here and this part from here, which gave us, it's like, wow, just at that point, it seemed like, but I really like your comment, monolithic to Lego block. So I thought you were going to say from monolithic to containers or monolithic to serverless, but Lego blocks. And that's, I might be jumping a step too far, but we're thinking about low code or no code and the ability for the business users to build something. So you mentioned Microsoft before, and Microsoft Power Apps, I think, is probably a good example. And there are many others out there of low code, no code. But it, then, you know, it's almost like here's your set of Lego bricks, kids. Now you go and make whatever you want because it's all got everything attached, you know, all your data, everything.
No, Ryan, they can't go and make everything what they want. You see, that's the conversation we're having with the business consistently.
I can imagine.
I guess the challenge for CIOs and CDOs at the moment is really, and I think this is the shift we're seeing from CIOs to CDOs, is that conversation with the business, right? Technology is technology, and there's heaps of it. There's lots of Lego blocks, but which one will we work with? Because each Lego block needs support, it needs nurturing, it needs someone to be able to work with it, and that's not to be taken lightly. And so we just gotta. For me, the challenge is not so much technology works. There's lots of technology. There's always a technology to solve your problem. Technology is not the issue. The issue is how much proliferation is this creating, and then how much complexity are you supporting? Because then when you try to put more into the funnel and there's already too much in, that's where congestion happens. And then that's where the cost, the complexity of integration, the support and all that, people go, well, why is it so expensive? It's because we're doing too much. I think the real challenge for technologists right now is how do we get to that conversation with the business and say, but tell me what your business problem is, and let me figure out with the plethora of solutions we've already got, what can we reuse? It's a bit like that green, you know, aspect of it. Why bring something new in when you can reuse what you've already got? Let me reuse something we've already got because it's already here. And then, you know, if it doesn't work or we don't have anything, then we'll look to add. But at the moment, we need to just always make sure that we understand the implication of those decisions. And I think technology, you know, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to come in, is it's always been the last to come into the room. You know, decisions have already been made, and now it's like, just do it. And that actually doesn't work. It creates a rod for our own back as a business. So to be upfront in that conversation, you need to have trust. The business needs to know that having technology in the room is not an impairment. It's actually an enabler. And that we can have that business conversation up front and understand that this is not just about plugging more stuff in. It's actually, what's your problem? And, hey, I might have something in my bag of tricks to help you out with. Let us solve that for you. And I think that's where technologists really love. They are problem solvers. And it doesn't mean that the Lego bricks we've got aren't good enough. So before we go and buy more bags, you know, how many of us have boxes of Legos in the, you know, stored somewhere? Because once you've built the thing, you don't want to build something else with it, so you just go buy a new box. We need to start reusing the blocks we've already got. And I think that's real difficulty, and that's the real challenge for us to go forward.
Absolutely. Well, hey, thank you so much for that and great discussion around technology. And yes, to summarize, there'll be a lot of organizations that are modernizing from the Y2K one. And now we're just going to get on to a final question in our last few minutes, which is around the lesson. So we want to look at this as a bit of a mentoring question, you know, if we will. An opportunity for you to share with everybody a lesson over your time career, and something that you know, maybe you had known then, it would have been helpful. So ideally, this will be helpful to someone else who's on their way coming through their career. So over to you. What can you teach us from your experiences?
Now, I found that question really hard because there are so many great things I've learned through my career that have been so helpful to me. But I guess one I keep banging on about is accessing personal coaching early in your career. I think a lot of times is by the time you become a senior leader, that's where coaching becomes available to more senior leaders. And in actual fact, you created a lot of habits by then. I think if we could introduce, you know, coaching, and not within necessarily your business, but actually a coaching network that is more affordable for younger leaders to learn as they grow and create better habits as leaders, so that they don't try to unlearn by the time they're so senior and realize the ways of their mistake, and try to then spend years trying to undo. I guess my big, I was fortunate to have found, to give my time to a company called, an organization called Springboard Trust, which helps principals in schools, being linked up with capacity partners. And so it's bringing the business and the school together and learning to leverage each other's strategies and business plans and so forth, but also learning about leadership and it's through there that I got access to a network of coaches, which are usually executive coaches, that I thought, my God, the insight and the experience and the wisdom that they brought. And I thought, why is it only accessible to the top leaders? Why is it not accessible to up and coming leaders? Because then it would means that we get better leaders. So for me, I decided that I wanted to invest for myself the same way, you invest in buying a car or a house or what have you. I didn't wait for a business to say, now you can have access to this. And I felt that personally, that's probably, an investment in yourself is as important as an investment into your assets or your properties, or, it's really important. And for me, it's totally changed my aspect of my leadership. I'm nowhere near, the best leader, I think, so I don't think anybody ever is. But the lessons I've learned from that and understanding who I was and what do I represent as a leader was so critical that now I utilize that to pass on to others, and others can learn from that. So if you can, of all the things you'll be told, if you can invest in yourself early as a leader, you will benefit so many people under you from that. I would say that that's probably the most impactful thing I could have ever done. It's the best investment I've ever made. It's not cheap, and I hope if more people do it, it's going to get much more accessible. But there's some great companies out there already doing it. That's what I would pass on.
Well, it's really interesting you say that. I have been doing a range of coaching, just started about 6 months ago, and I'm just moving on to another different type of coaching. Having two running concurrently. And it's amazing, mind blowing what I've been learning. And imagine if I knew this 10 years ago. So it's sort of like
it's the psychology of human beings, right? We don't even study how we actually operate. It's ridiculous. We invest in everything else except ourselves on how human beings operate.
Well, that's exactly what I've started doing. And I love the space myself, right? So I talk about mental health, I talk about counseling, working with counselors, which is part of mental health being the new black in some ways. The more people that do, the more it normalizes and helps remove the stigma, right? But part of the genuine discovery for me was, it's like you go, I'm not a mechanic. My wife's probably the mechanic out of the two of us. But I take the car to the shop and the mechanic says, we're going to do this, and explains what's happening in the background. And explain what was happening. So when I went to the counselor and they explained what was happening, it was just like, oh, I get it. And all this concern and pain went away. So now I'm working with a coach who's talking about, I'm just trying to think of, on the spot, I can't think of the examples, but it was like being given a guide map to human beings. That's kind of what I think of it. Okay. Explaining what happens when you're talking, what happens, and breaking it down. Amazing.
One of the things I learned for myself, I thought, I wish I would have learned that 15 years ago. It would have been so much easier. It's like, wow, why couldn't I have seen you? Like, why didn't I meet you 10 years ago? And, I could have made such a difference, But I guess you've got to go through that to learn. But I certainly now, every chance I've got, a job for me will never fulfill me. But making the difference in someone's life, even if it's the one thing I've ever said, and that's going to set them off to say, you know what, that's the one piece of advice that stayed with me. My God, that is more valuable than anything you do.
That's beautiful. I love that statement. A job will never fulfill me, but if I can help change one person's life, then it's never. That's
well, magic. I've had people around me dying and stuff, and you know, people don't remember what position you held in a business. They remember what you said to them one day. That's what they remember.
Yes. That's amazing. So, hey, look, we're just coming up. We're just a couple of minutes over. That's right. We start a little bit late. And obviously, if you're listening now, you'll hear the echo and the technology challenge we've had. This is the first time ever we've ever had this challenge. And Roxanne, you called before that we've had it. So, I'm not sure. It must be something with my technology. But I just want to give you a moment to think about your closing remarks. I'm just going to summarize and take you through some of the things we've talked about. So we had an introduction. Rock, and she talked about how she started on the sales and marketing side and then moved over to tech. We looked at the first big questions culture, and that was all around creating a great team, creating trust, enabling vulnerability, and being able to come together, because we, Roxanne, recognize that we do spend so much of our time at work that we should be able to be friends and have a great time. And that was just music to my ears. We moved on to technology. And of course, that's what turns our world in the technology space. What are the cool projects you're doing? And sometimes it's one of the tough things you're doing, and that is removing big monolithic systems from Y2K and also dealing with the complexity of multiple systems, because over the last 5-10 years, they've popped up like mushrooms. People don't pick them up and add them to the basket. So great challenges for you and the team working on. And of course, the lesson, keep coaching quickly. And this may be when you said, making it more accessible to the younger people, because they don't necessarily understand your story and the senior salaries, especially when you're trying to build a house, have a family, etc. Coaching might be a luxury you can't afford at that point. But enabling it through some form of access, that looks like a great idea. I think this is a bit of a rundown of our session today. Over to you, Roxanne, on today's session. Thank you.
Well, look, I really enjoyed it. And, we know we could talk forever. And, for me, it's always about giving back. And I always say to people, if they want to reach out to me on LinkedIn, I might not get back to you straight away, but I will get back to you. I'm always available. I'm never too busy to help somebody out. So, might be busy to do work, other more work, but never to give someone counsel or advice or, even get feedback for myself. So, I thoroughly enjoy these are the sessions that just bring me joy. So always love talking, love technology. I think the most creative people in the business are technologists. And we need to really, really harness that. And I think they'd rival any marketers any day. but, they're just fantastic people. So, and I just love working in that sector. So, it's exciting. It's fun. It's very challenging and complex. But, hey, life would be boring without it. I encourage more people to.
We just made technology as simple as Lego blocks today. So congratulations, because it absolutely is complex and challenging and exciting and fun. So thank you so much for all your time this morning. It's been a pleasure being able to hear from your insights and experiences. And I'll just say once again, thank you to Consulting and John Foote for enabling CIO Yarn Live throughout April. We've had yourself, you're the fourth and last one for April. I'm not sure if you saw, we started off with Steve James, I've had Russell Jones, and then Julian Downs for the break for Easter, and of course yourself. And next month, just so you and everyone on the call knows, we've got Mandy Simpson, Andrew Black, and the last two I'm just forgetting, so they'll have to be a surprise when the announcement comes out. But lastly, Rox, thank you so much once again. And I'm going to finish off with saying I'm still waiting for my wine.
Yes,
go to Sultan.
It's coming.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. And we'll say kaki tano to everybody out there. You have a wonderful day. And thank you again.
Thank you so much for inviting me.